Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Stare Down. I'm Sean Carpenter in Columbus, Ohio, joined by my regular co-hosts, Bill Risser in St. Petersburg, Florida, and Ty Meininger on the road in a courtyard by Marriott somewhere in Georgia. Boys, how are you? Bill, start with you. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. I'm sitting here in St. Petersburg looking out over the water in the dark and reminiscing about golf on Sunday. Sean, I've played my fifth round with this men's group I've joined, and I'm now officially able to gamble. It just feels good. So,
now, did they give you like four rounds to make sure your handicap was set? Is that?
Yeah, and it's not a handicap. We play actually a modified Stableford. So
love it.
I would say that a scratch golfer would be somewhere in the 34, 35 range would be their quota, and okay. They would try to score above that. Right? It's a point, 1 point for par, two for. Try to start over. Three for birdies, two for pars, one for bogey, and you know that's it. And eagles pay four, but you know. So once you get to double bogey, that's a zero, and it keeps moving, right? So my scores have been 24, 22, 18, and threw up a pair of 14s, which is about a 92 in golf. It was bad, and so, but I got my number assigned. And you can imagine they like the high scores when they're setting that kind of a thing. You understand that with golf. So I'm a 23 entering next week, my first week of putting money in the pot, trying to win a couple $100 if I can be the guy that gets highest above his quota. Make sense?
And what's the pot each week? What's the ante?
$20.
$40? $20, okay.
Just 20. Okay. There's anywhere from 40 to 60 guys playing every week. It's a lot of fun. So.
And for those people listening, like maybe Cousin Bailey or someone like that, who is the where's the rotation in the St. Pete area? Where do you guys play?
It's the exact same
West course. Chase.
It is West Chase, the same course every week. So almost everyone lives there. To be quite honest, I'm an outlier. You know, I drive the 25 miles, whatever it is, to get up there. Anthony Malafronte lives in West Chase, so he's part of the group. You know Anthony well, member of the Real Estate Sessions crew. So. We're having a blast up there. It's a lot of fun. So that's good. The long version of my weekend. How about you, good. Todd?
Bill, I said it before. I'll say it again. I'd kill for a 92. That's that's music to my ears. So I am – it's Sean. Please let me know, and Bill, if I'm having some connection issues. But I am coming from the original ESPN's title town, USA, Valdosta, Georgia. Do you remember when they announced Valdosta's title town?
About Lowndes.
Lowndes County?
Yes.
Yep. Well, you're either a Lowndes County or a Valdosta City person down here, so you learn that pretty quick. But anyway, big push next week's Thanksgiving week, so big push this week to get as in front of as many customers as I possibly can.
Good, man. Good for you for being on the road and saying goodbye to Jenny and the kids and doing what you got to do and saying hi to the Marriott family, right? They always take good care of us on the road. Marriott is the unofficial sponsor of the Stare Down.
So I'm in the Marriott courtyard as we speak, and I try to stay there as often as I can.
Awesome. Well, guys, it's been a fun sports week. It went quick, it seemed.
I got to stop you, Sean. You got to tell us what you did this weekend.
Well, I road trip this weekend to the Columbia, South Carolina, where my daughter's in college at the University of South Carolina, and I attended the Florida South Carolina football game. So it was a good road trip. / family weekend. Got to see one of our good friends, Todd, Jim Mullaney, one of my longest tenured friends. Had a long conversation with Riley about friendships in college and kind of your freshman year, you ebb and flow through the lonely times and the friendship times. But really, after your sophomore year, that's the people you become lifelong friends with. And if you think about it, Todd and I met after his freshman year, but my sophomore year, and it was a great weekend and we had a good time. We'll talk about the game later in the college football portion of the show, but I can't tell you how much I just love being around a college setting. Bill, you got to experience it. I think we could feel your your enthusiasm and your passion on both Snapchat and text and your recap a couple weeks ago on the stare down. Being around a college setting, the everything from the bars and restaurants and the hotels, they're all stabbed by the students, the buildings and the history, the tailgating, the just everything about it just brings you back to those times when you're in college and life was easy and you know, you woke up and you went to a game and you drank and you went to a bar and you had dinner and you did it all again the next day. It's just such a cool atmosphere. And while our team lost, it was just fun to be there. And then yesterday I helped my daughter out. Her sorority had their philanthropy 5K, a 3.1 mile run. And every girl was required to sign up somebody. And so Riley asked her dad, "Hey dad, would you please sign up for the race?" And, as a competitive guy, Bill, I'm not just going to sign up and not run.
Right.
So the fact that I hadn't run in 5 years, didn't hold me back. And, I don't know if you read my blog today, but I got out there in the turtle trot and I ran every step of the way from the start of the gun to the finish line. And I never walked once. I ran a very slow pace, 11:16. Miles, but or 11:16 was my pace, but I finished and I was actually pretty proud of myself. I'm still sore today.
I was gonna say, how are the quads doing?
How are your knee? You know, probably not the best idea to run 3.1 after never running for five years and then getting in a car for 8.5 hours and driving home. Todd, your question is what?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to. First of all, you quit running because your knees, right? You had knee problems?
Yeah, I had knee surgery on my right knee, and my left knee is feeling like the meniscus is probably about the same. You know, the discomfort, the pain I feel is probably the same. So that's why I ran it really slow. Every time I felt like I was uncomfortable, I would just slow down a little bit. One thing you learn, and Todd, you've run, I think, a few 5Ks and things like that. When you run a race, the biggest concern is the adrenaline hits and you feel like you can run faster than you can. And so you start running faster to keep up with the people in front of you or the people that are passing you. And it's an ego thing and you don't want the people passing you. So you pick up the pace and then you just can't sustain it. Mm-hmm. So you end up having to stop. And one of the biggest tips I ever got when I started running half marathons, and then eventually my only full marathon in Columbus in 2006, my younger brother, Kevin, who's run, gosh, I think I'm going to guess 25 or 30 marathons.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. You know, my brother went through drug and alcohol addiction. And when he became clean, he needed something else to become addicted to. It's one of the things they teach the addiction people. So sometimes addicted people, they start smoking cigarettes, but he wanted to kind of go healthy. And so he started just becoming addicted to running. So when he would want to take a drink or, you know, use drugs, he would go out and run 8 miles or 12 miles or 15 wow. miles, which just seems weird to us. But, but he told me, he said, pick someone that's in front of you and just stay with them. And then once you pass that person, pick the next person in front of you. But if you ever feel tired, slow down, but do not walk. Mm. Because when you walk, your body starts shutting down and it starts stopping and you've got to keep it on almost like putting your car in neutral. You know, you don't want to ever put it in park because the engine starts running differently. And so that's one of the best, still what, 16, 11 years later, I just remember. So I just ran kind of really slow, but like I said, I was proud that all the Riley and her sorority sisters were kind of lining the path and they cheered us along. And it was a good weekend, Bill. So thanks for asking. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun to read about it and watch it, you know, through the beauty of social media, right? To be able to see. How that I can't, you know, I got to do that with Kevin, but my drive was only 25 miles, not 8.5 hours.
Right, exactly. Yeah. A little more commitment.
Yeah.
So you give me flashbacks. One, I haven't seen Kevin in years, but you mentioned him. Bill, I don't know if you ever had the pleasure of meeting Kevin, great guy, but you would never know what plight he went through, right? He's not one of these guys that, you know, went through what he went through and is judgmental or preachy. I mean, you just never know. And we always had a driver, right, Sean? Yep. Kevin was always there. Just a great guy. God, I can't remember last time I even seen him. But so in 2002 and 2003, Sean, I ran the Peachtree Road Race, which is a 10K, 6.2 miles, July 4th. Yeah. And I ran them both cold without training. And I remember halfway through the 2003 race, I'm like, dude, I'm never doing this again. I was 33 and not 23, right? So it was just absolutely miserable. So
yeah,
I've run a couple of road races, but I learned my lesson. And Jim Mullaney used to come up and run that every 4th of July.
Yeah, he says he's run 15 of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. He says so, he's run 15 of those. So yeah, but you know, just a shout out to my brother again, Kevin, you know, he's one of those guys that when you come through an addiction program like he did, there's one of two ways it's going to work. It's either going to work or it's not going to work. And Kevin chose the right path. It worked. And all the decisions he's made. But it's kind of cool because he was mature enough when he got into college. This was all in high school. And when he got into college, he wanted to experience the fraternity life that my brother and I did. You know, my brother before me, my brother Jot and I, very active in our fraternities, and he wanted to have that lifestyle. He just didn't want to have to do the drinking in part. And so luckily he was connected up with some guys at the Pike House at Ohio State, and they understood what he was going through. And he's the guy who's at every party. He'll stay late. He'll be there at closing time, but he just won't be touching any of the substances, and he'll be driving the guys home and keeping them safe. And he's done that for, I think, 28 years now. So I'm really proud of him. So
non-judgmental, cool. Just does what he does and worries about himself. Right.
That's
awesome. Yeah. So, all right, boys, let's talk sports. I'm going to shake up the order so we can go heavy on the back end on college football. So we're going to go professional first, and then we'll finish with college this week. Let's start NBA. We're a couple weeks into the season. I wrote down the division leaders right now, kind of in reverse order. Houston, 11-3. Golden State, after a couple losses early, 10-3. And Denver leading. In the West, Oklahoma City, 6-7. So just keep an eye on that. Billy Donovan is the head coach. You got Russ Westbrook. You got Paul George. You got Carmelo. Over in the East, Orlando 8-5, Detroit 10-3, and Boston 12-2. Boston, even without Gordon Hayward, looking really, really good. And the Cavs 6-7. So just a Bill, your thoughts on the Cavs and Oklahoma City, two of the, I guess you could say, all-star teams, right? With you got, you know, Kevin Love, and you got LeBron, and you've got
Isaiah,
D Wade, and Isaiah, who hasn't played much, right. And you've got Oklahoma City, both losing records with tons of pressure on them, and you've got Boston, really just cruising in the Atlantic.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think that when you look at what the Cavs are doing, your first thought is there a problem with everybody gelling together? I mean, they had Kyrie and Love and James together for quite a while. So, you know, what's happening there? Is D-Wade just that old? Maybe he's not, able to perform at the level he needs to perform at. Are they trying to figure out how it's all going to put together? I mean, they have plenty of time, right? We're way early in the season with an 82-game schedule. But, yeah, that would be a little disconcerting to me if I was a Cavs fan to see that they're 6-7 through 13 games. That would be rough. And OKC with Paul George and
Carmelo
and of course, Westbrook. That's scary too, right? I think that one of the things you got to watch out for, I think, in those divisions or those races are how far away are those guys in front of them getting. With the Pistons, I don't know. I just don't feel too concerned about that. Sure. But for OKC, that's a different story, right? Because they're I think they're in Houston's conference. Let me make sure. Look at that. Yeah, right. Help me out here.
Sounds right.
Yeah. No, they're not. They're not actually.
They're in Denver. They're in Denver's conference. Yeah. I believe.
So they're they're 2 games out at 6-7 because the Nuggets are 8-5. So once again, they're in a good position too.
Look, I don't think any of the three of us think that they're not going to be in the final eight, right? But it's just interesting that I think at this point in time, you're probably, you got three guys, three elite level all-stars playing together. And I think it's a matter of figuring out kind of, look, Russell Westbrook's going to get the ball 51% of the time.
Right.
I don't think there's any doubt that Russell Westbrook's not going to change his game, that he's not, the ball is not going to not run through Westbrook. Right.
Right.
So it's a matter of the other guys finding their offensive thing, but at some point in time, the guy's got to play defense, right? And they just can't lose games 131 to 128. You know, they've got to win games 126 to 114 because of a couple defensive stops in that fourth quarter. Todd, what's going on with the Atlanta Hawks? Are you seeing? Do you follow them at all? Does the NBA have your attention at all at this point in the season?
I love to follow the local teams. That said, it's still early yet. I think the Hawks have potential. I don't think they're going to be great shakes this year, but certainly maybe a 6, 7, 8 seed playoff contender.
Sure.
But yeah, as far as really competing, I don't see it. Going back to the Cavs and the Thunder, I'm more worried about the Cavs. I think OKC is kind of like the Cubs in baseball, right? I think they're going to figure it out. I think the three stars will figure out how to play together. I think Cleveland's gotten old real quick. I think LeBron is still a great player, don't be wrong. I mean, look at their coach. You know, Lou, would he be coach anywhere else other than Cleveland? It's, you know, because LeBron kind of can, you know, kind of bully him a little bit or push him around. I don't know if that's fair to say. But anyway, I just think I think Cleveland's in trouble. I think OKC will be fine. So,
yeah.
How about did you all hear the story about – I guess this is having to do a little with college basketball too, but our friend Ball, the UCLA, his younger brother, what happened to him in China?
Well, actually, I want to talk about both the balls. So let's start with Lee Angelo. I'm not sure how you say it, but so he and a couple of his teammates were arrested for shoplifting in China, which is a 7 to 10 year sentence in normal conditions. There's been many Americans that have been caught in a crime like this that they've been in jail for years. They were over there to play, I think, Arizona. Or no, who are they playing? They were playing
Houston. I can't remember.
Somebody, but yeah. So,
was it UCLA, Georgia Tech?
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech. And long story short, a couple guys from UCLA were arrested for shoplifting.
At a Louis Vuitton store in China. Who knew?
Is that what it was? Okay.
Yeah.
And long story short, they were released. But you know, once again, it was a field day for ESPN to make their dad be a fool.
Yeah.
I don't think they're released yet, Sean. I think they're still a
couple more weeks. I think because Trump's already stumped in, just kind of jumped in, talked to the prime minister, with the chairman in China, and I think they're gonna get him home.
But they were not released. Okay, I thought they were.
They're under hotel
hotel security,
house arrest, kind of, yeah. But they're
also,
they can't leave the hotel. So
I wouldn't want to be caught shoplifting in Canada, England, let alone China, North Korea.
Right.
I mean, what's it? Afghanistan, Iraq. I mean, what are these guys doing, right?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
They just need a morph of the reality show for the balls.
Right. How many times have you been caught shoplifting? Just twice. And for those of you that can't see on the webcam, I'm holding up just two fingers that are cut off at the knuckles. The other ball, Lonzo Ball last night or two nights ago made a little history. The youngest player in NBA history to record a triple-double, beats LeBron James by, I think, 11 days.
Yeah.
You know, matter of time, and someone will beat Lonzo's record, I'm sure. But, you know, the guy is the point guard for the Lakers. His job is to distribute the ball and to, you know, obviously these days point guards don't just, you know, they get in the paint, they get long rebounds, but pretty impressive. You know, he's had some struggles, I think, early in the season.
Has he been a little up and down, Sean?
I think he's been up and down. I think he's been, you know, clearly if you're going to judge a player 22 games into the season, probably not fair. But he has not been Magic Johnson.
Well, he also has a massive target on his back. About it. What his dad has said and what his dad has done is just, it's the worst thing a dad can do to a son, right? By calling him the next Kobe, by calling him as great as Michael, his career will surpass and eclipse LeBron's. This is stuff this guy says. So every single player against the Lakers, they got one thought on their mind, and that is to just make Ball look bad.
And yeah. So
you know, for him to just, he's just got to power through this, and he'll probably come out on the other end of it stronger, I would guess, because he doesn't seem like a bad guy. He seems like a good kid. In fact, when after the triple double, they mentioned it, and he goes, "Well, that's great, but we lost. So I'd rather take a win." I mean, right away. Yeah. For a 19-year-old kid to say that, be that, you know.
Yeah, Bill, to your point, like there's been many proud parents through history of sports. There's been many maniacal parents through history of sports.
Yeah.
I can't think of one that had that type of parental footprint that has gone on, right? I mean, Tebow got lots of media love and obviously did amazing things in college that might not ever be touched. Elway had a dad that was pretty, pervasive on his
sure.
career.
Sure.
Elway went on to win two Super Bowls. You know, and so
you can think about it. How about Tiger's dad? Right. I mean,
that's a good point. Yeah. Elway
put a lot of pressure on him. And there's also, you know, you got Marinovich's dad and it didn't work out for him. Right. Because
Capriati.
Yeah.
Capriati. Anyone read Andre Agassi's autobiography?
No, but
his dad apparently, he said he hated tennis. He hated it, but he was so good at it that he played. But apparently his dad was cut from the same cloth as Capriati. I mean, he was just a drill sergeant. And, you know, he was 12, 13 years old hustling tennis matches for money, you know, just because he was so good.
Well, that's
read that biography, sports book.
Right. So then you take Richard Williams, right, for Venus and Serena. Who mm-hmm. drilled his, you know, the whole work ethic and everything into his daughters, but that worked for them, right? They're two of the greatest tennis players of all time. But man, Ball just took it to another level, because I don't think none of those parents we've talked about ever went out and spoke ill of the rest of the league or the rest of the
correct. Yeah, you know,
they just talked about how great their kids were. Putting down something else, and that's just
You never heard Earl Woods talk about he's gonna. You know, crush old man Jack Nicklaus or whatever. Yeah. Exactly. It was a very different, Bill. That's a great point. It was very different. And you know, there are other parents through history that have probably done a lot of things for their kids. They've moved schools, they've moved states. I'm sure, you know, Phil Mickelson's family, you know, putting in the short game practice area in their backyard. That wasn't just a gift. That was a mortgage. That was an extra weekend of work. That was whatever it was. But it's just, you know, this Lonzo Ball thing, and who knows, 15, 25 years from now, when we're on episode, you know, 4,000 of the stare down, we may look back and say, remember when we used to criticize this kid? but chance, history, I think, shows that we're probably on the right side of history, that the exceptions, the Tiger Woods, the Venus Williams, you know, even the Tom Marinoviches, who got to the, you know, elite level of college football. Mm-hmm. You know, he was one of the probably top 10 quarterbacks at the time.
Yeah.
At least according to the media. Mm-hmm. So interesting to watch. So Lonzo Ball, let's see what happens the rest of the year. Will he be the NBA Rookie of the Year? We'll talk in May next year and find out.
Only time will tell. Yeah.
Hey, Sean, real quick. I saw an interview with Lonzo Ball and it was actually pretty funny. They asked him about his dad and he's like, "My dad's always been like this." He's like, in 10th grade chemistry class, he would brag, "My son's the best in chemistry lab." Like he just, since he was 5 years old, he said, "My dad's always bragged on my kids, whether it be box ball, chemistry lab, and now basketball."
So. But by the way, if you get time, go to NBC, check out SNL's, they had Low Ball, the dad, LeVar Ball on Weekend Update. It was hilarious.
was he on or he was?
Oh, no.
Parodying him. No, okay.
But it was a great parody.
It was a parody. Nice. I'll check it out. All right, guys. Let's other kind of forgotten sport at this time of year. Let's talk about the hockey really quick. Let's just go through the divisions.
Let's talk about the Eastern.
Yes.
Good.
Well, let me start in the West. LA leading the West with 24 points. St. Louis with 27 points. St. Louis up 6 points over the next nearest competitor in the West. In the East. New Jersey with 24 points, and right behind them, Columbus, Washington, and Pittsburgh. And let me say those three names again, because I think you're going to see those three teams. Columbus, Washington, and Pittsburgh, just a point back. But in the Atlantic, Tampa Bay with a 6-point differential right now with 30 points. They are out of the gates, Bill. Hot. scoring goals and just playing some amazing defense. What's the word down there on Tampa? Are they hopefully they are getting front line on the 6 o'clock sports, versus the Buccaneers or what? What's going on with the Lightning?
That's not really the case. It's all about the Bucs and how bad they are, right?
The Bucs and the, yeah.
Yeah. So that part kind of is not good, but the local diner where I get my breakfast, Robert, who's one of the guys who works the tables and stuff, Robert's a great, huge fan of hockey. So every time I walk in there, he just goes, "How about them Lightning, Bill?" He just lets me have it right there. And so we start talking about Kucherov and Vasilevsky and Stamkos. And it's been a lot of fun, having that little piece, a couple times a week with Robert at Central Coffee Shop. If you're ever in St. Pete, make sure you hit him up,
Bill, I follow you on social. Have you been to a Lightning game yet?
I have not. Okay. Part of it is this, I know that's bad, Bill. Part of it is this, just either I'm so busy with what's going on at work and it seems like a hassle to get across the bay to get over to Amalie Arena, right? From where I'm at, it's about 20 miles away. Whereas, the Rays are a 15-minute walk.
Sure.
And the Bucks are, I did go to a Bucks game, but those are different events because there's only 10 of those. But I will get there. I've got plenty of time this season, so I'll get
there.
Is it the Courtney Campbell Causeway you have to cross over, Bill?
Actually, the Howard Franklin would be better. It would take you right into downtown Tampa.
Can I amend something I just said? I know I'm going back, but my phone was – I was looking up the Hawks record. They're dead last in the East at 2-11.
I thought you were just very confident. I'm like thinking,
No. And again, I think we've talked about this about a lot of sports except for football. I tend to be a late adopter, right, as the season gets going. Baseball is perfect. I mean, you love this, but until, Memorial Day, 4th of July, that's when it starts to really get interesting. So I was way off on my hometown Hawks. I briefly looked them up and they're struggling in the East at number 15 seed right now.
So. Yeah. I think is it Schubert or whatever? Who's the guy that has like the blonde patches?
Dennis Schubert? Yeah, Dennis Schubert.
Yes. Yeah. He's a interesting character. Him and Bazemore.
Yes.
And you got to give a shout out to the Golden Knights of Vegas hanging in there, right?
Yeah.
Second place in the Pacific. And how good is that for an expansion team? Or how good a deal did they cut, as far as the draft goes and who got protected and who didn't, because they put together a heck of a team.
Yeah, but we've seen that happen in other sports, Bill, and they've really come out of the gates early. They've had good attendance. Yeah. They've had good support. The team, the fans, the visiting teams, no one's really spoken about how shitty the ice is or how disrespectful or whatever. It's been a nice little setup as far as how that goes. All right, guys, let's turn to the NFL, and I'm going to turn this over to you guys. I'll just kind of lead the conversation because I didn't see a single snap. I'm talking not a single snap because of my drive home. As we're talking right now, the Monday Night Football game is happening, Carolina and Miami, no score. Let's start with Thursday. Perhaps some of the worst color rush uniforms I've ever seen, the Seattle Seahawks. Day glow. I don't know if it's green or yellow.
Tennis ball yellow. I don't
know. Ooh, that was ugly. But Seattle wins, but a huge loss for the Seahawks in that game, with Richard Sherman going out for the season with an Achilles tendon tear. What was your build? That's your side of the country. What was your thoughts on that game? Seattle wins. Eliminating Arizona, obviously, clearly from the playoffs, which they probably were already. But
yeah, I mean, look at the Cardinals lost Carson Palmer and David Johnson, right? I mean, the Cardinals are trying to figure out who's going to be who. Drew Stanton was the quarterback, and he's just a backup. But as far as the Seahawks go, they had a lot of injuries happening. The Richard Sherman one was big because that's going to be season ending for him. But a lot of guys are going down in that game.
Yeah,
the Cardinals had a chance. They really had a chance to, I guess, put the Rams in a better position. That's all they're really doing. They're playing spoiler role already, in my opinion, even though they were, 3-5 going into, or I'm sorry, 4-4 and going into the game. It just didn't feel like they were going to be that good. I would, the Seahawks are favored in Arizona, and that's the right team won as far as that goes. So,
Yeah. All right, let's get Sunday's games. And just, I'm just going to kind of roll through the slate and just you guys jump in as you see fit. I'll kind of start. I'll give the mic to Todd. New Orleans beats Buffalo 47-10. And my first thought is New Orleans is really starting to play some good football. And I'm going to make maybe the early stare down prediction that we're going to see this team in the NFC Championship game. They are playing some really high powered football. Todd, what is going on with New Orleans?
They've won six in a row, right? I think they started out 0-2, 1-2.
Seven in a row.
Bill, okay, yeah, I thought it was six. I thought it was six in a row. But 0-2, 1-2, they won seven in a row. This is a beatdown against the Bills. The Bills were putting together a nice little season, and boy, I think they're at home losing 42-10, whatever that final score was.
47-10.
That was a big one, and the other big one was the 49ers got off the winless schneid, if you will. Say that a much needed victory for them, leaving Sean, your Browns the only unfeated team right now.
They are my Browns only the way that I guess the Gators are Bill's Gators.
Let me talk about a game. How about a great quote I heard about the Chargers figuring out another way to lose a one possession game. Like they're 12th in the last two seasons.
Jeez.
It's a crazy number, right?
And wow.
I read a story where the guy said the Chargers were the chargest at the chargeriest moment of the game, where they just did what they did, what the Chargers do. And that was Philip throwing a late interception. There was a late fumble in a regulation, and Philip gets an interception return to the two during overtime. So they kicked the field goal to win the game. But just the Chargers being the Chargers. And, you know, let's see, they're 3-6 now. So they had a chance at that point. They could have got to 4-5. But, man, I other than a few of the players were around when I was there, I don't care. That's awesome.
Yeah. What are your boys' thoughts on the LA Rams? Another multiple-digit blowout. They won 33-7. It was a close game in the first half. Jared Goff really looking comfortable under center.
Looking like he's the draft pick. He got drafted at the right spot in the draft, number one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he really comfort level, confidence in the huddle, at the line of scrimmage.
They're legit.
Looking on the sidelines like he's the, you know, I know there's other people that could take this, but he's looking like the Tom Brady heir apparent. I mean, he is the good-looking guy who sort of sits on the sidelines with the confidence. The team clearly believes in him. They are a solid team right now. I think they are two games up in the West?
Just a game up on the Seahawks.
Have they played the Seahawks yet, or do they still have two games to play with them?
I don't think they've played yet.
So that'd be interesting to see, because that'll be the separator right there.
Yep.
But they, 33-7. Todd, talk about your Falcons beating the Cowboys.
Yeah, Falcons, they're one of those teams we talk about, right? They've been up and down, but if they start peaking at the right time towards the playoffs, I think they have a chance to be good. They have a chance to make a run similar like they did last year. But the Cowboys were kind of exposed a little bit. I don't know if it's just the NFL and every once in a while you're going to have a bad game, or does Zeke being gone really make that big of a difference for him? What do you think, Bill?
Oh, I think it's Zeke. I think Zeke's a big part of that team. You look at the yards per carry for him and how many yards he gets in a game, and what they had against the Falcons. They're struggling. They're going to be hurting.
Bill, you're a stats guy. Don't look just at the yards per carry. Look at the yards per play. Like, he gets so many dumps out of the backfield. He gets probably, eight or nine passes out of the backfield.
Yep.
Because the way he stays in the block and then kind of releases, he's always that, fourth option for Dak, which is the most comfortable pass of any of the passes Dak's going to throw right before getting sacked. And take him out of the equation. Number one, you're putting in a guy who doesn't block as well as Zeke, doesn't catch as well as Zeke, and doesn't run out of that catch as well as Zeke, right? I mean, that's a huge, huge loss.
Yeah, they're going to struggle. I don't. Well, you think about it. First of all, they're playing for a wild card because they're not going to catch the Eagles. There's just no way. So they're already in a position where at 5-4, they've got to keep winning games if they want to even have a shot. You know, because if you look at it right now, it's crazy how many teams are within two games of the wild card. You know, in each division, it's like 10 teams are within two games of the two wild card spots. And that'll start kind of, you know, figuring itself out over the next few weeks. But, you know, we're coming up on week 11, correct? Yeah, which is the 10th game for most teams. And, you know, so we're nearly three quarters of the way through. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. And so next week, speaking of Eagles, they're on a bye week. What is the latest with Zeke? Is he going to just take the suspension starting now? What is going on with that?
Yeah, at least now I'm hearing it's at least four, but probably six. Yeah, so I'm not sure why they're saying that. But
so that takes him to the end of the season almost.
Just about.
The Eagles have the week off. They then have an extra week because they kind of go Sunday night at Dallas. That is the Eagles at 8-1 against Dallas 5-4 without Zeke in Dallas. That game pretty much, I think, if my math is right, Philadelphia wins and they clinch the East. Maybe they're still one game out because the Redskins are 4-5. Dallas would then be 5-5. Philadelphia would have a game in hand. I guess
they're 8-1, right?
Yeah, they'd be 9-1, so they would be technically a game away from clinching. Yeah, so they would. Yeah, but that is a statement game. But coming off of, I mean, Philadelphia's going to have 2 weeks off, Sunday night game.
This is an early line, but right now the Eagles are only 3-point favorites. I know it's in Dallas, but that seems like that's way.
That is asking for action right there. That is unbelievable. Yeah. And hey,
Give me a minute.
He's gonna get on the computer.
and last game I want to talk about was last night's game. I did see a couple plays. Newsflash: New England is looking like the favorite in the AFC. I don't know what else to say. They are really now. Pittsburgh might have something to say with that. Pittsburgh just that you know their car's not out of gas, but they're going to stay in the slow lane. New England is looking really good. I mean, they were just toying with Denver, and you could just tell whatever Belichick angst has for Denver for the couple losses that Peyton Manning and the Broncos have given to them. They were throwing the ball with a minute, 7 seconds left in the game, completing long passes. New England's looking really good, guys. I don't know what to say.
And I like New England against the Steelers every time they play. I mean, how many big games of the Steelers are like snake bit against the Patriots? So that's the worst thing for Pittsburgh fans is to see Brady, you know, at 39 or 40, whatever he is.
40.
Looking like the same Brady when he was, you know, 28. So that's
and his game, their game plan is so solid right now that they're just their run pass mixture is so consistent.
Yeah,
he gets the ball out of his hand so quickly. I've never seen a team use a tight end more lined up wide than they do. But all of a sudden, when they go in that zone coverage and he's lined up against a 5-2 or 5-3 corner, Tom Brady's just like licking his chops. Like he almost has, like he licks his fingers like Jameis Winston, you know, like eating his W.
That was the worst.
had to bring that up. That's awesome.
That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life. All right, boys.
I don't care what you say. I'm not taking my Bucks decal off the back window of my pickup. All right. I'm keeping it on.
Keep it on there.
Support
Keep it on, baby.
Support where you live. All right.
Support where you live.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, guys. Let's talk college football. It was a fun weekend in college football. It was a little bit of a letdown.
Was there some college football this weekend? I don't even know.
There was.
Yeah.
And this is
only three top 10 games, right?
College football is once again this weekend reminding me that college football is the greatest sport. Just the whole day is connection worthy. Let's just go kind of through the numbers. All right, let's start with a game that was the middle of the day game, the primetime game on CBS. Number one, Georgia, and we're going off the CFP rankings. Number one, Georgia against Auburn. Georgia rolls in undefeated, ranked number one in the college football playoffs off of a big win at Notre Dame. But then the whispers start happening, and is that win kind of shrouded by beating a bunch of shitty teams in the SEC East? Turns out Auburn, with two losses, playing at home in Jordan-Hare Stadium in a big game, pretty good team. Todd, let's start with you. Georgia gets blown out. They lose 40-17 with a late touchdown for Georgia. It was really not even close. Georgia scores the first 7 points of the game on the first drive. They went through Auburn's defense easily that first drive, and then it was goodnight, Irene. It was 40-0, 40-3, I guess, for the next 3 hours and 10 minutes. What was your thoughts on what you saw there in Jordan-Hare?
Oh man, I got a lot of thoughts, Sean. That was a good old fashioned beatdown, right? A beatdown that Georgia's been handing to a lot of teams. So it just reminds you how difficult it is to play on the road in the SEC, right? I don't care where you are, what you're ranked. When you're on the road, it reminds you that Auburn, with two early losses, may be right back in the mix, right? If they win out, beat Alabama, beat Georgia, they'll be considered in the top four, which you'd think with two losses is unheard of.
Let me pause really, really quick. If they if they beat Alabama, pretty much have to beat Georgia again to get in the playoffs, I think, because if they don't, Georgia gets in the playoffs. Yeah. Yeah. So they, but you're right. They're right back in it. And they, once again, there's three teams that control their own destiny in the SEC. That's Georgia, Auburn, and Alabama.
And that was my last point for Georgia. As tough it is as it is, they're waking up licking their wounds. You still control your own destiny. The bullseye's off your chest. Living in Atlanta, knowing a lot of Georgia people who attended, they were so happy being ranked number one. And I was like, why? Let Alabama be one. Just be in the top five. Because, you know, you have to win the SEC championship. Just be in the top five or six. But, you know, being number one's fun. That said, they have time to regroup and still control their own destiny. So if they can learn from this loss, I think George is still as good as almost anyone out there.
Bill, let me ask you, as a Florida native, you're starting to probably just almost by accident after golf on Saturday be tuned into that CBS 3:30 game. It is the game in the Southeast. I mean, you know, Brad Nessler and Gabriel Danielson for a long time, you know, whatever game Vern was calling was the game. Now Florida was on CBS. Anytime there's a 12 o'clock game on CBS, it's the auxiliary game just for coverage. What was your thoughts on that game? Did you see any of it? And what was your impression?
I'm looking at Georgia undefeated. You know, they're only that maybe the only time they really got pushed was the closest game with Notre Dame, right? Otherwise everything had been kind of easy. But I've come now, after more closely paying attention to college football than I have probably in my life, I'm ready for anything.
Right.
I mean, I'm ready for anything. And when Auburn started going off, I'm like, this is awesome. I mean, you know, that rolls out to a lot of other games you're going to talk about too, where a lot of things happened that were absolutely not expected. And it's funny, you know, I played golf with a guy from Georgia, right? So he's on Sunday morning, I got to show up and see Gary at the golf course. And I found out the week before he went to Georgia and grew up in Georgia. And I said, and he mentioned how rough the night was the night before with a few extra pops and a couple of more whiskeys. And I said, was that to drown out the pain from that Georgia Auburn game? And so that was, you know, kind of fun. I get to learn all everyone's schools, and
that's how it works.
That's a part of it. Yeah. A lot of fun. A
couple of beers and a couple of fingers of whiskey. You got it. Tom, what were you going to add in there?
So what I wanted to add is Auburn made it look easy, but if you think about it, and guys, we all know this, we're not coaches, but they stopped the run. Georgia's strength was run.
Yes, they did.
They had 40 yards rushing.
Yes.
So they made Georgia one-dimensional. They had to pass. I think Jake Fromm got a little too much criticism on social media. People were like, bring Eason in. I'm like, I don't think that's the issue.
Yeah.
They just couldn't run the ball, and that's why they lost the game.
And I'll tell you what, Auburn's four guys on the island, right, the corners and safeties, because they were pretty much putting the other seven guys in the box. They were Chubb. I mean, you didn't hear Chubb or
Sonny Michel.
You didn't hear their names at all. Seven guys were so well owning the offensive line that they were basically just saying, like, hey guys, you match up on the three guys on the outside and it's all good. So Sims got a couple, got loose a couple early for some really good catches and some big plays. But you're right, Todd. Great analysis there is that the run, and that's what let's segue that conversation to the next game, because the Alabama Mississippi State game was a really good game to watch. I mean, that was the 7 o'clock game on ESPN. We were back at the hotel at that point in time in South Carolina. A game that Mississippi State was, I don't want to say in control of, but I don't want to say Alabama was in a hole. It just, they had Alabama played even until about 4 minutes to go in the game. I mean, they were
up at the beginning of the fourth quarter, right? I mean, Mississippi.
Yes, they were. They were up, and once again, Todd, it's something we've been looking for a long time. And we had arguably, and I know Bill's not a fan of his, but arguably one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time, football players, Tim Tebow, Jalen Hurts plays the game with absolutely no emotion. I mean, no emotion. And you know why? You saw his dad on the sidelines. They kept showing him. His dad never, ever changed emotion. His mom. Yep. I mean, his dad just stood there like this the whole time, just nodding his head he's a smart player. He is almost the perfect player to fit under Saban. Now you see why he's such a perfect fit under Saban, because Saban demands excellence. And all Hurts does is go out there and just run the plays and execute the plays. But let's start with you, Todd. What did you see in that game? Nick, first of all, Nick Fitzpatrick, I think is his name. Did a great job. Dan Mullen called a good game. They were solid. They just, at the end of the game, when you needed a drive, Jalen Hurts delivered. And he came back and tied the game. And I think I want to turn to you, Todd. Once Alabama ties the game at 24-24, right? Time's running out. The ball goes back to Mississippi State. Alabama, for some reason, kicks the ball out of bounds. They get the ball on the 35-yard line, and they call two out of three plays passes. One was almost picked off. Should have been picked off, really. What was your thoughts there? Kind of just take me through that game, what your thoughts on that, because that was an ebb and flow game where you just saw Georgia lose.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure what's going to happen with Notre Dame, but at that point in time, at that point of the game, Notre Dame is getting waxed in Miami, which we'll talk about next. What was your thoughts on, is Alabama going to lose this or are they going to come back?
So great, very complex, but great question. So I associate Alabama today with Florida and 10, 12 years ago with the New England Patriots, right? It's I'm trying to verbalize it, but what a mountain to climb just to beat them, right? You got momentum the past couple years. I never thought until Alabama loses, you don't think they're going to lose, right?
Right.
And Clemson, what a tribute to their team last year to beat them in the national championship game. I mean, that just doesn't happen. So Alabama's obviously well coached. They got the perfect quarterback.
Stop. Exactly what happened in the championship game. Jalen Hurts brings him down, scores, and you're like, that's it. That Jalen Hurts is Alabama. And then Clemson went down and did it. Mississippi State couldn't do that. And that, more props to Clemson, right?
Absolutely. And here's another thing, talking about Mississippi State. I saw or heard a stat today, and Bill, you're really good at looking this stuff up, but I think Dan Mullen, when he's at Mississippi State, the head coach, I think I heard that he is 2-16 versus top 10 teams.
Wow.
And again, I apologize if it's not, it's got to be close to that. But so again, you have momentum on your side, not just momentum of the game, but momentum of your team. And if you're a senior on that Dan Mullen team, you've been a lot in those 2-16 games against top 10 teams.
Yes, you have.
So are you really believing that you're going to win? And Nick Saban and Bill Belichick and Urban Meyer, when he's at Florida, now at Ohio State, they just believe they're going to win. Dabo in Clemson, I think, is the same way. They don't win every game, but gosh, it's just tough to beat them. So, long answer is, until I thought Alabama was going to come back and find a way to win. I was happy for Mississippi State. I was kind of rooting for them, but until they lose, it's Alabama, right?
Bill, were you watching that game? Did you watch it till the finish?
I did, and that was tough because an early golf day on Sunday. But how can you not take your eyes off Jalen Hurts? I mean, you know, he gets the ball back with like a minute nine, and he's facing like a 3rd and 15 all-out blitz. I mean, they're going to
and a like seven-man blitz.
It's everyone, right? It's and he has
one read.
What and turns out I think he kind of schoolyard that in the huddle. He told that receiver on that 3rd and 15, run this play. Trust me, I'll hit you there. Just do this. Yeah.
Kind of like Spurrier drawing plays in the dirt, right?
Exactly. Yes. And so, and the, to Bill, do that.
Bill, then, Bill, I 100% agree with you that I think he said, if you see the linebacker and the safety come in, you cut short and I will hit you on that. And who's their star receiver? I can't think of his name, but I mean, he threw it behind him.
Calvin Ridley. Does that sound right?
Calvin Ridley. Yes. Yeah, and he caught that pass. Got the first down. And then the next pass was almost the same thing.
26-yard touchdown pass with like 25 seconds left in the game. I mean, this kid, he's a true sophomore, right? He's not a redshirt sophomore. He's 2 years out of high school. And he has the composure of an NFL quarterback. Like you said, unbelievable. A lot of fun to watch.
They scored, you know, once again, Bill, for you, late game, you're ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
They score. Then the guy kicks it out of bounds again. Nick Fitzgerald gets two. Then they throw up pass interference. One of the guys they brought in, who I'm guessing Nick Saban's discipline, that guy won't be brought in again on prevent defense because he tackled the guy. He really did tackle the guy.
Yeah.
They get one more throw, and Fitzpatrick throws it out of the end zone, which was just a huge mistake. But that was a fun game to watch. Just a good SEC game where, you know, everyone in the country rooting for Mississippi State.
Yep.
Except SEC fans. Yeah. All right. How about the next game? Number 3 in the rankings, Notre Dame, against number 7 in the rankings, Miami. Game day's there. Pretty good crowd. I thought was pretty impressed with the crowd at game day in Miami, even though the campus is 40 miles south of where the stadium is. Todd, you and I both know Miami's not a huge football program as far as the fan base and the, you know, they're not
How many students go to Miami? What their enrollment is?
17,000 or something like that? Or
8,000.
Wow.
Really?
8,000. And for them to be as good as they are, but you're right, as far as Florida goes, and Bill, I think you'll learn this the longer you live there, but Florida's alumni base is the biggest by far, much bigger than Florida State Miami. But yeah, Miami has 8,000 students that attend. I mean, that's nothing, right?
So when you look at that, when you look at those 30 for 30s on the Catholics versus convicts, I mean, that program was made by Jimmy Johnson and Howard Schnellenberger. But Todd, your initial, I mean, you're kind of in the back door of your heart, and your dad, I think, maybe is a little Notre Dame fan. That was a beat down. That was a, what are they calling it? The turnover chain.
That turnover chain traveled a lot. Yeah, I like looking at – I'll always go a little outside the game because you guys are really the analysts of this stuff. But I'm telling you, Dan Le Batard went to U of M, right? He's a Miami guy.
Right.
Yep.
And your boy. Yeah, and I love Le Batard. And so today's opening for the Le Batard show was Dan all year long ripping the Canes, saying they're the third best team in Florida behind UCF and USF, saying that there's no way the Canes, until they can compete with Virginia Tech or South Carolina or NC State, I'm sorry, how could they even begin to, you know, think they're worth anything? And he just kept – it was just quote after quote after quote because the guys in that studio who live in Miami
– Stu Gatz and those guys, yeah.
Those guys – well, yeah, especially Mike, their producer. They're huge Hurricane fans, and they're having a great time. And Dan's just going, this isn't it. They're not close. They're not ready. They're too big for the moment. There's no way Notre Dame's going to lose. And he just went off on these guys, and they played that 7 times. Coming back from commercials was just nothing but Le Batard just eating it on who the Hurricanes are. I mean, look, they played themselves into a position, right, with that incredible win that – if they can win out and beat Clemson, they're in the playoffs. And that's crazy. Playoffs? Yeah, they're there, right? So, I mean, you know, they're so fast, right? That's the old Miami, right, from the 80s. Super athletic, super fast.
No doubt,
Not super big, but, man, they're everywhere. So, And that vaunted offensive line for Notre Dame didn't do anything.
When you see Notre Dame against a Purdue or Michigan State, and you're like, look at how athletic Notre Dame is. And then you see him against Miami.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, people say like, oh, Southern speed's not all that. It was evident in that game.
Yep.
That one pick six where at the end of the half, he flared it out to the right-hand side, and the Miami guy picked it off and just went like 80 yards the other way. Yep. Notre Dame was going to try and score, maybe quell the tide. Todd, what are you going to say?
Sean, I actually lived both in South Bend and Miami, right?
So, oh, yeah, that's right.
From 2 to 4, lived in South Bend, Indiana, and then from, 4 to 15 years old, lived in Miami. So about Miami, they're so flashy, so athletic. Could they have a better coach for just to kind of balance them out than Mark Richt?
Yes.
And conversely – I don't know about you guys, but I cannot stand, for whatever reason, Brian Kelly of Notre Dame. He just drives me absolutely, absolutely crazy. So happy for Miami. I think, talk about someone who controls their own destiny. They got some tough games left, but as Bill said, if they can find a way to beat Clemson, they're in the playoff.
Yeah, and I will just say, Todd, just mark this down now. Once again, episode 83 of the Stare Down. Mark Richt doing this without his own players. And when he gets his kind of guys in there with the swagger that Miami brings, you can roll out a two-star in Miami who's going to go to the U and play well. He kind of owned Dabo when he was at Georgia, because Georgia and Clemson always used to play. I expect Miami will be back. I'll just say that now. I think when he gets his kind of quarterback style in there, keeps the defense they have solid. Let's roll through the rest of the games. Clemson over Florida State. It was a 17-14 game with, I think, 4 minutes to go in the third. Clemson goes on to win 31-14. Florida State falls to 3-6. Oh, by the way, the same record as the Florida Gators. The Florida Gators and the Florida State Seminoles are going to be playing next week. I don't even want to say I'll assume Florida will beat UAB. And Florida State will be whatever rat program they're going to play next week. That game is going to be two teams that are 4-6 playing against each other. Bowl game's not in play.
Oh.
The teams have stopped even talking smack. They're both just ready to be finished.
Sean, I can't believe you're assuming a win over UAB. I really can't.
I'm not. I prefaced that by saying I don't know that both teams would win next week. But
yeah.
Oklahoma beats Texas Christian 38-20. Now, just a point, three games in a row now, Oklahoma has had 38 points at halftime. This is the first time they didn't score in the second half. 38 points. They hold on to beat TCU. Oklahoma number 5 in the rankings. TCU number 6 in the rankings. Clearly respect for TCU. But Oklahoma is playing some good football right now. They'll be top 4 this week. They'll be in the playoffs. They'll be in the top 4 this week. Okay. They'll be number probably 3.
Iowa State, right? Is that who they lost to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Iowa State. How does that happen? How does a team play so well against the sixth ranked TCU, right? Play so well, and there was a shootout with the Oklahoma State game. But that's college football. It's not like the NFL where you can lose a game or two or three even, and kind of be in play. Every game matters. It's a playoff every single week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill, look at Ohio State. Ohio State comes back from 18 points down on their home field to beat Penn State, number 2 Penn State.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, Ohio State's a lock. Then they go to Iowa and they get beat by 31 points. They gave up 55. Then they come back and beat Michigan State, a pretty good team, at least we thought.
Oh, Browns.
And they beat them by 45. wow. This college football playoffs now gives hope to all these myopic Buckeye fans in town that just think, well, they're right in it. They've lost twice. They lost to a bad Iowa team. They lost to Oklahoma. It's interesting. It's really going to be interesting to see what happens if Wisconsin or, who knows this whole – how it's going to break down. Let's pump the brakes. Let's wait 2 more weeks and talk, right?
Yeah.
But Oklahoma looking at – let me ask you, Bill or Todd, Baker Mayfield, which quarterback does he remind you of? If you had to name one that's gone on to success in the next level, his style, his swagger.
Favre maybe a little bit? Brett Favre?
I think a lot of Favre. He's just that swagger, that country boy, that, you know, you
want unbridled enthusiasm, right?
Yes, exactly. Very similar. A couple more games out of the top 10, and we'll close it out. Wisconsin goes to 10-0. First time that school's ever been 10-0. They beat Iowa, that came off of a big win against Ohio State. Once again, a kind of a boring Iowa performance. It's going to be one of those things, guys. If they beat Michigan this week in a 14-10 type game, a 17-11, whatever, I think a lot of people are going to say Wisconsin doesn't deserve to be in. But if they plod through a victory, maybe against a high-powered Ohio State team, whether it's a high-scoring game or not, they could get beat 60-0 against Ohio State. Yeah. But Wisconsin putting themselves where they need to be, right? If you're a fan of Wisconsin, you are where you want to be. Washington gets beat on a Friday night by Stanford. And OSU, as I said, beat Michigan State.
So the Pac-12's done, right? There's not going to be
Pac-12's done. Yeah.
No one from the Pac-12. So that leaves the question just is.
Well, USC is kind of climbing up, but I think everyone else around them is so much better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they lose this weekend, Sean?
No, SC's
not. USC won this week.
Yeah. 7-2, right?
Oh, they did? Okay. My bad.
SC's like 11 in the country. I don't know how.
Oh, my mistake.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you think about ACC is going to put a team in there more than likely. It's going to be Clemson or Florida.
I think the winner, yeah.
Clemson and Miami, one of the two. I don't see Alabama not getting in. And it could come down to just the Alabama-Georgia victor, right, if you want to just pick one team. But that's definitely – there's always an SEC team. The question is, will there be two?
Right. Well, the only way Alabama doesn't get in is if they lose to Auburn. If they lose to Auburn, then Auburn goes to the SEC championship game. So that's when Alabama is going to go to the Orange Bowl and play UCF.
Right.
And like Hawaii, they lose to UCF, you know, in that game because people will say they didn't care or whatever.
Right, right.
Georgia still has Kentucky and Georgia Tech left. So, right. I mean, even if they make the – they're making the SEC championship, but even if they beat Alabama, if they slip up versus one of these two – teams the next 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where Ohio State has to pray for Georgia to lose before the SEC championship game.
And then to beat Alabama. And
then beat Alabama.
Or Auburn,
yeah, who has two losses. But at this point in time, I guess let's compare two lost teams. Let's say Auburn wins out and Ohio State wins out. Ohio State beats Michigan at Michigan, beats Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. Two losses. Their losses are to Oklahoma on their home field and unranked Iowa at Iowa. Okay. Auburn's losses are to at Clemson, ranked number two in the country.
Week one.
And at LSU. I got to go Auburn at that point in time.
Yeah, I agree.
If Auburn beats Alabama, Auburn beats Georgia twice.
Auburn has a chance of beating the number one team twice in a matter of 3-4 weeks, right?
Yes.
Wow.
That's pretty powerful.
Pretty impressive, right?
And never lost on their home field, right? Never lost on their home field. So,
and the Iron Bowl in Auburn this year.
In Auburn. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, guys. Fun conversation. Let's wrap up. Todd, you are in Southern Georgia, so wrap up on what you're doing this week. You're obviously trying to close some deals and get some turkey on the table.
So, real quick, I would be remiss. Just like the USA, Italy did not qualify for the World Cup.
Ooh, really?
Italy?
Yeah, the first time in 58 years. They lost 1-0 in an aggregate to Sweden today. So, a lot of tears in the United States and in Italy. So, Sean, you are correct. I am I'm in South Georgia. Next week is Thanksgiving. Being a manufacturer's rep for 24 different door and hardware companies, they want orders before December 1st so they can ship. So that said, next week being a little kind of a hybrid off week, I am trying to see as many customers as possible this week. So I'm just grinding. So it's a grind week for me.
Nice. Bill, how about you, bud? Last week, good episode on the stare down. JC Reitman, good friend of mine. Really enjoyed the episode. Boy, that girl talks fast like I do. but for a young girl, very knowledgeable, she's seen the world, and she's really good at what she does.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I was looking forward to that one a lot. This week, I go local again. I'm down in the Bonita Springs area with Adam Rude. Adam Rude is the designated like a managing broker of Domain Realty, which about 200 agents. And I'm telling you, Sean, one of the most sophisticated operations when it comes to online lead generation I've seen on a local level. Domain cool. Realty is their name for a reason, because they were the domain group at another brokerage. They have created a farm of URLs that just blanket the Southwest Florida area. And they've done it since 2008. This is not a recent thing. So they're really good at what they do. He's in his early 30s, mid-30s, and went to UNC Charlotte on a soccer
team. Nice.
Played for three or four minor league kind of soccer teams, USL stuff, but then also for the Chicago Fire, a little cup of coffee. So he's cool. we had a great long talk about soccer in the United States. From 8th grade to 12th grade, he spent summers over in Europe on different trials, Bundesliga teams, you know, just trying to get into their junior program. I mean, so he's a soccer aficionado. We'll get him on the show one day. A lot of fun. So he's going to be the guest tomorrow. You should listen, Todd, I'm telling you. And I'm going to announce it now. I am on the countdown. I am now just 9 days away from Kevin and Leah showing up in St. Petersburg for 5 days. So that'll be great.
Nice.
Having the kids here.
First time visiting the condo or?
No, they've Kevin's been a few times. We haven't seen Leah since we moved out here in January. She helped drive one of the cars. So we haven't seen Leah in a long time. So we're excited.
That's cool. Very cool. That'd be fun for you to introduce them to all your local, your local friends, right?
The brew pubs. Go ahead and say it.
that's fantastic. And they'll be looking forward to that. So guys, for me, it's a home week. It's a rare home week. It's like a homestand in the, when the Padres had like that 21 game homestand, Bill, where you looked forward to it, but you were kind of anxious because you're home every day, but you're also working. But I do have a couple opportunities to speak in front of an audience. Tomorrow I'm doing what we call Best Seabolt, our Cold Banker Online training. I named it a few years ago, Best Seabolt, bringing elite speakers to Seabolt. So I get to be that elite speaker they're bringing to Seabolt. I'm doing my episode called 20 Secrets of a 20-Year Rookie. So I'm going to share with our newer agents what I've learned getting back in the business. And then on Wednesday, I get to meet with one of our top teams from Keller Williams here in town, a team of 8 people. I've known her for probably 17 of my 21 years in the business, and she's invited me to come speak with her team to kind of get them ready for 2018. So I'm meeting with them. And then it's kind of just survive and thrive the next 14 days, building relationships, solving problems, and having fun with people around the country. So starting to really book up my Q1 of 2018 already. So I got about 7 or 8 opportunities. And Bill, I reached out to someone from the Naples Area Board of Realtors reached out to me. So if I ever book that, I'm going to reach out to you for sure. Make sure you're there.
I'll be there. Awesome.
All right.
Hey, Sean, you want to give a quick shout out to your boy, Ryan Bocross? Isn't he taking on some training?
Yeah. Good shout out to Ryan Bocross. I believe he's going to be the director of training with, I think, ERA Realty. With Realogy. So very excited for Ryan and his family and whatever that may bring for them. We'll do everything we can. And as a fellow Stare Down alum, we'll be rooting for him to go along. But Bill and Todd, it's been great chatting with you. On behalf of those guys in St. Petersburg and Valdosta.
You got it.
In Columbus, Ohio. We'll look forward to catching you guys on the Stare Down.